Blog Talk Radio.
Not that I need to say that. You already know that. Walmart is dodging taxes with so much money that they're basically bigger than small countries. The amount of money that they're hiding and the amount of money in taxes that they're dodging is ungodly. So I'm going to kick it off with that story in just a second here and give you some specifics. We also have Florida Republicans being Florida Republicans. They think it's a brilliant idea to do a new round of tax cuts for the rich, specifically for yachts, while at the same time denying health care to poor people. Stay classy. Classic Florida move. Donald Trump sits down for an interview with Bill O'Reilly. Now, we could spend all show on just that interview mocking it, but instead I clipped out one little segment on foreign policy that really sums up Donald Trump, and we'll just focus on that. We also have Rush Limbaugh today doing a I Told You So segment, and it is the most unmerited I Told You So segment I've ever seen in my life. I do those segments because I'm an asshole, but Rush is a bigger asshole, and he's doing it when it doesn't even make sense. So we'll point out the stupidity of that. Greg Gutfeld on Fox News attacks the Pope because the Pope acknowledges that science exists. We have more on medical marijuana and Crohn's disease, another story about that. LSD microdosing, what the fuck is that about? I'll tell you about that. And neo-Nazis are really confused because apparently they've convinced themselves that they are moderates. Oh, it's hilarious, man. Oh, man. I mean, I talk about how I'm a moderate. We could not be any more different from neo-Nazis, but they're like, no, we're the moderate ones. Okay, well, let's look at your policy ideas, and then we'll determine who's really moderate and who's not. But anyway, let's go ahead and get started here, and we'll kick it off with a story from Bloomberg about Walmart. Bloomberg News is reporting on some new research from Americans for Tax Fairness. And it basically exposes the extent to which Walmart is dodging taxes. They say, quote, according to the study, 90% of the overseas assets owned by Walmart were through two of the most popular tax havens in the world, Luxembourg and the Netherlands. Although the company has no stores in Luxembourg, it reported $1.3 billion in profits in the country between 2010 and 2013, which were taxed at a rate of less than 1%. Whoa. So they don't even have any stores there. They make over $1 billion there. And then they're like, oh, we paid our taxes. I don't know why you guys are bitching. Okay, so it was less than 1%. Whatever. It is what it is. Could it be any more clear what they're doing here? But that's not even the full extent of the damage. In total, Walmart, quote, hid $76 billion in overseas tax havens using 78 subsidiaries and dodged $3.5 billion in taxes. So they're storing $76 billion in overseas tax havens. $76 billion. That's more money than some small countries have in their budget. $76 billion, dodging $3.5 billion in taxes. Those are incredible numbers. And, of course, who can forget that while that's going on, Walmart is also costing taxpayers in America $153 billion a year because they pay their workers such low wages that they don't make a living wage, so those workers are then dumped off to the government for the government to provide food stamps and a social safety net and Medicaid and things like that to make sure that these poor people don't end up dying. Oh. I find it hilarious that there's still some people who exist who say that Walmart hatred is unmerited. That crowd still exists. You can find them over on Fox News. You can find them, you know, online, the conservative outlets. Even somebody who I like. I mean, Penn Jillette is a guy who I agree with maybe on 40% or 50% of different things. He's a libertarian. But he did an episode of his old show, Bullshit, where the topic was Walmart hatred. It was all about how Walmart hatred is bullshit. No, the show Bullshit on Walmart hatred is bullshit, if that makes any sense. No, this is ridiculous, man. And what's the main issue at play here? Corruption, bribery, money in politics. It all comes back to that. When you have Walmart paying lobbyists to go to Washington and basically give the congressmen and give the senators anything they want and give them paying contributions, they understand that that's not because they're kind people. They're not doing that because they agree with a senator or a congressman from Kentucky on the issue of abortion. They're doing that because they know, I scratch your back, you scratch mine. That's the way this works. That's the way human nature works. So if somebody cuts you a check for $123,000, you are more likely to do something for them. And so they get subsidies out the wazoo. And this $153 billion, to be clear, is not even the direct subsidies to Walmart, the corporate welfare check. They get billions of dollars in a corporate welfare check directly to them every year. The $153 billion is the amount of money that goes towards their workers in a roundabout way through the social safety net, again, in order to make sure that these people aren't homeless and can survive. So if you think there's nothing wrong with Walmart, and if you think that there's nothing wrong with the way this system of open bribery works, you need to reevaluate because you just don't know your facts. Okay. Now, that's how fucked up Walmart is. Now let's go to how fucked up Florida is. Addicting Info is reporting on an infuriating story coming out of Florida. Apparently, as the Florida special budget session came to a close, Republicans decided to slip in a brand new $400 million tax cut for the rich. And this tax cut included a break on yacht repairs. So it's not like they're slipping in this tax cut at the last second and it's a middle-class tax cut. They slipped in the tax cut. It's for the rich, and a big portion of it is a tax break for yacht repairs. I wonder who the Republicans in Florida are working for. I can't figure it out. Now, let me give you guys some more details on that. The deal would, quote, cap the taxes on boat repairs over $1 million at $60,000. In fact, here's what one of the Democrats, Geraldine Thompson, said about this on the floor. Quote, there are many people in my district who own boats, but none of them own boats where they would have repairs over $1 million. In fact, the boat itself would not be worth $1 million. And so a part of this tax package limits repairs on boats, really yachts, to $60,000. But if you are a small person and you have a small boat, you're going to have to pay, you're going to have to pay these taxes. But if you have a yacht, and the repairs on your yacht are over $1 million, then it's capped at $60,000. I think there was a typo in there, and it's supposed to say if you have a smaller boat, you're not – oh, no, it's right. You are going to have to pay those taxes. If you're rich, it's capped. So the idea is, again, if you're middle class, you know, these taxes – you're going to have to pay your taxes if you have a small boat and you get the boat repaired. You're going to have to pay it. There's no cap for you. But there is a cap for, a yacht owner – at $60,000, and let's be clear, what likely happened to get this slipped into the tax package? Well, it was likely a very specific rich person in Florida who sent a lobbyist to get a very specific deal, this being in the deal, because they personally needed over $1 million in repairs to their yacht, and they didn't want to pay taxes. That's probably what happened here. Okay, but again, the idea is the break doesn't help the middle class, but it does help the rich. Maybe as like, so let's say this was a standalone issue, and it was just like, whatever, they don't want to tax something like that, so they're making a principled argument against it. Like, there's a principled libertarian argument you can make against having taxes on repairs of boats. I understand that. So as a standalone issue, it's not like a crazy thing that's not debatable. No, it is. It's a very debatable issue. I understand that. But here's the kicker to the story, and here's the real problem. Quote, a week and a half ago, House Republicans voted to kill a Senate bill that would have expanded health care to almost 1 million of the state's working poor because they said, and I quote, we can't afford it. So that's the problem. The problem isn't the idea of trying to limit taxes on boat repairs. I'm not even sure that should be taxed in the first place. So whatever, I understand that. The real issue is, look at their fucking priorities. They rush to give tax cuts to fucking yacht owners while at the same time saying we don't have the money to give health care to 1 million poor people. They still have an expanded Medicaid over there. In a lot of red states, they still have an expanded Medicaid. Bitch, you can't say a goddamn word about wanting to give more money to the rich unless and until you take care of the healthcare situation. See, that's the real issue at play here. It's the screwed up priorities and the screwed up value system. They're so corrupt and they're so bought and they're so dumb that they don't realize that what they're doing here is immoral. And these things, understand these things are mutually exclusive, man. You can't, if you're a person who would vote for the tax break for the yacht owner, but you wouldn't vote for the health care for the poor people, does mean you're a bad person. And those things are mutually exclusive, right? Like, it shows where your heart lies and what your belief system really is. You might pretend you care about the common guy. You might pretend you care about the poor, but you don't. And your actions speak louder than your words on that. 17,000 people die every year because a bunch of Republican governors refused to accept the Medicaid expansion under Obamacare. 17,000. But meanwhile, in these same states, the Republicans are tripping over each other to give a tax break for fucking yacht repairs. This is the problem, man. This is why we always talk about how Congress, on a national level, they have like a 9% approval rating. Why? Because shit like this happens all the fucking time. Now, in this case, it happens to be the state government in Florida, but it's no different. These sons of bitches are bought as well. So it's almost like, how much of this can people take? And the problem is, to add another aspect to the conversation, the media won't cover this. You know, CNN's not going to cover this. Even MSNBC's not going to cover this. So your people are left to, they don't know what the fuck is going on. They either don't know what the fuck is going on, or very few people will listen to a show like mine, and then we want to try to do something to change it. But we're not gathering enough momentum because not as many people are educated, because the media keeps you in the fucking dark. It's not nefarious. They just suck at their jobs. They're just massively incompetent. So it's a terrible thing, a terrible situation, and it should be reversed, but I'm not going to hold my fucking breath because we all know it's not going to be reversed. All right, now. Oh, boy, are we already moving on to Donald Trump? It's like a nightmare having to cover this guy. We just covered him yesterday. I need a Donald Trump breather. I will get none, though. Donald Trump sat down with Bill O'Reilly for a hilarious interview about his presidential run, and he said something already disqualifying on the issue of foreign policy.
But this is like the lightning round here. Can you just tell me how you're going to solve all these problems? ISIS. How are you going to defeat ISIS?
I would hit them so hard. I would find a proper general. I would find the Patton or the MacArthur. I would hit them so hard your head would spin. Now remember, and I sent you the document, I said in 04 we should not go in and do that whole thing with Iraq. It was a disaster. Because I said that Iran will take over and it'll totally destabilize the Middle East. But there's nobody bigger or better at the military than I am.
Are you telling me you're going to send American ground troops into Syria?
I'm not telling you anything. And the reason I'm not is because if I run and I win, I don't want them to know the game.
Okay.
Yeah, let me
but
just
you
say
have to, you,
no,
you want to hit them hard.
I'm probably going to have to say something. I have a way that would be very effective with respect to ISIS. But when I watch Obama get up and talk about in 2 weeks we're doing this and in 3 weeks we're doing that.
Put American ground troops in to chase them around?
Take back the oil. Once you go over and take back that oil, they have nothing.
But how do you take
you
it
know,
back?
Right? You have to go in. You have to go
with
in.
Ground troops.
Well, you bomb the hell out of them and then you encircle it and then you go in and you let Mobil go in and you let our great oil companies go in.
Sure.
Once you take that oil, they have nothing left.
Did you catch it at the end? He's like, you let ExxonMobil, you let Chevron, you let our great oil companies go in and take the oil. Donald Trump is the conservative id. We've spoken about this before. And that's why, in a weird way, you actually have to give him credit. Because he says the shit that all the other idiots are really thinking, but they have the filter and they know not to say. Like, a lot of conservatives, be honest here, when the Iraq war happened and people were saying, oh, it's about the oil, in their minds they would say, yeah, you're damn right, it's at least partly about the oil, and that's fine, let's take it. That's what they were thinking. Well, Donald Trump just comes out and says it. He said it before about Iraq, time and time again. At the CPAC speech like 3 years in a row, he was like, yeah, let's take the oil. To the victor go the spoils. That's the way war works. Go in there, go into a sovereign country that didn't attack us, we killed all the civilians, now take the fucking oil and run. Let's do it, let's do it. Now he's saying the same thing with Syria. And then idiots like him will turn around and say, why do they hate us in the Middle East? I don't understand. We're so great. I mean, hello. We're Americans. Do they not get that? USA. Well, maybe one of the reasons why they dislike you, Donald, is that you fucking went in there, gunning people down left and right, and then you took the oil, and you fucking advertised to the world. Hey, Chevron, come get yourself a piece, son. Hey, Mobil, where you at, dog? Come get this. Our great oil companies. And, of course, Bill O'Reilly, being the fantastic journalist he is, he goes on to push him on that, right? Of course not. Let that slide. Why? Because that's probably what Bill O's thinking in the back of his mind, too. He's like, well, I mean, if we're there already, what are you going to do, leave the oil? Is that what you're going to do? You're just going to leave it there? Look, the only is part where you give him a little bit of credit, and I'm not even going to give him a little bit of credit. I'll give him 0.01% of credit here, is when he says, like, I said we shouldn't have gone in there in the first place. I said it would destabilize the region. So the 0.01% of credit is that he just said that right there, but I don't even necessarily believe him that he said it back then. And notice the year he said. He said in 04, I said we shouldn't do it. Well, the invasion happened in 03. Where the fuck were you in 02 and 03? He's like, well, then I was four, but then in 04 I was like, eh, maybe not. So that's why I said a little bit of credit, but not even really giving any credit, because he's probably doing revisionist history there. But his other quotes are classic Trump. Quote, I would hit them so fast and so hard that your head would spin. It's going to be, like, totally crazy. We're going to, like, take the guns and we're going to go boom, 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 boom. And they're going to go, ah, you hit us. You hit us and I'm hurt. I'm going to die now because America is so wonderful. That's what the ISIS people are going to say. They're going to say something along those lines, Bill. He says, there's nobody bigger or better at the military than I am. There's nobody bigger or better at the military than I am. That's why I said we did this segment recently. I honestly think there's a decent chance that Donald Trump is like special needs. And I was honestly expecting a backlash when I did that video of people being like, come on, you went too far. No backlash. Everybody was like, I can see it. And notice he did the same thing there where he's like, Bill, look, I'm not going to tell you my ISIS policy because my ISIS policy is so super special that if I win, I want to be the one to implement it. God forbid Obama implements it now and actually wins now. I can't have that. I want the glory. So therefore, I'm going to wait until I'm in office to do it. I'm not going to tell you my policy. And then cut to like 30 seconds later. He's like, so then what I want to do is I want to go in, I want to hit him from the air, which Obama's doing already, by the way, and then you surround him, and then you take him, and then the oil companies come in and steal it. Brilliant, am I right? No, Donald, you're not right, as usual. What kind of a message, serious question here real fast, what kind of a message does it send to the rest of the world when a guy like Donald fucking Trump is running for president of our country? What kind of a message does it send? It puts on blast the worst stereotypes about Americans. I mean, that's really what it does. You know, like, there is this, Americans might not realize it, but there's this perception of Americans around the world as selfish, narcissistic, piggy, loud, obnoxious, imperialist, have an overblown sense of entitlement and how important we are, yada yada, not that smart. And then along comes Donald Trump. He fulfills every one of those stereotypes. Every one. And, you know, he's a one-trick pony also, because what does he revert to anytime there's any criticism? I'm rich. I have a lot of money and stuff. I'm Donald Trump. You like my hair? It's actually a dead ferret. He's making it harder, man. He's making my job easy in the sense that it's so easy to respond to his bullshit, but he's making my job harder in the sense that we're trying to explain to the world that we're not with these guys. Please, when you think of America, don't think of Dick Cheney, don't think of George Bush, don't think of Donald Trump. Hopefully you'll think that there are more people in America like us, the people who actually don't want to fucking randomly invade places and take all their natural resources. But like I said, at least with him, he's the id. He's wearing it on his sleeve, you know? At least you could take off the mask. When Dick Cheney tries to pretend like we're actually doing shit around the world for humanitarian reasons, he's lying. So Donald Trump comes along and he's like, well, you know, maybe a little bit is just to steal the natural resources. And how much reinforcement of this do we need? You know, we've spoken time and time again about how during the Cold War, look at what America did around the world. Post-World War II, American foreign policy is as crazy and as brutal and as vicious as any foreign policy of any imperialist power ever. And a lot of that had to do with maintaining power, maintaining control, and taking natural resources. You guys know where the term banana republic comes from. It comes from us toppling a government in South America because our banana company wanted the fucking bananas. So you put, you know, prop up fascist puppet governments that'll give us anything we want, pretend like we're in favor of freedom and democracy as we do it, and you're basically living in an Orwell book. That's what it boils down to. But there are still people who try to hide it and mask it, and you got to give Donald Trump credit for that, is that he's not in the Dick Cheney camp where he's trying to be like, no, I really care, I'm altruistic. Where's my dead baby? I want to drink its blood. What? Did I say that out loud? Donald Trump is at least like, yeah, no, let's take the oil. ExxonMobil are my boys. And remember, yesterday, another reason Donald Trump is ridiculous, because he doesn't know whether he's coming or going. He can't keep up with his fucking bullshit talking points. Yesterday, he was like, the lobbyists run Washington. That must come to an end. And then today, he's like, yeah, I'd invade Syria and give the oil to the U.S. companies. So wait, you just said you were against the lobbyists. Now apparently you're for the lobbyists, and you're the lobbyists' wet dreams. You're going to give them all the oil? And look, man, let me be perfectly clear as well. Does ISIS need to not have access to these oil fields and make money that way? Of course. I mean, that goes without saying. You have to stop ISIS from making billions of dollars in oil. Of course. But the issue is, when you do that, what do you then do? Do you just stop them from taking it, and then we start stealing it? No, because that's a sovereign country. We can't do that. That's ridiculous. Would we accept that if somebody came into our country and started stealing our natural resources? Fuck no. We'd start World War III over that shit. So what do? Well, the international community would need to destroy ISIS in that region in Syria, and then the Syrian regime would have to take it back over. Or you keep it under international control until the region stabilizes further, and you figure out exactly what's going to happen in Syria moving forward. But I know that reasonable. So it's not something Donald Trump would ever consider. It's like we're in the my buddy was talking to me about this yesterday, man. It's like we're in the fucking Twilight Zone with Donald Trump. It's like we're in the fucking Twilight Zone. The past, three elections, four elections, he teased a run nonstop, but he didn't run. This time he teased it, and then he's like, no, actually, I'm going to do it. I'm going to run. We're living in a world where Donald Trump is running for president of our country. God, man. Oh, we've come a long way down from FDR, haven't we? Okay, let's take a break. When we come back, Rush Limbaugh is going to do the most unmerited I told you so segment of all time. Greg Gutfeld is going to attack the Pope, because of course, and more on Crohn's disease and medical marijuana. You're not going to want to miss that story. Stay right there, guys. We'll be right back. Is going to do an I Told You So segment when it's 100% unmerited. Here he is talking about the Pope's new encyclical on climate change.
You know, I hate saying I told you so all the time. But when it needs to be said, I do not shirk from it. Did not I tell you that Pope Francis, after early on, he started attacking capitalism using Democrat Party language, unfettered capitalism. I said, this guy sounds like a Marxist. And remember the ruckus that caused in the Vatican, without naming me, of course, because I'm just a peon, started denying it left and right. The Pope is not a Marxist. This is an extreme characterization. The Pontiff's remarks, there's no way. But I stood by it at the time. I caught a heck of a lot of grief from the drive-by media for pointing out early on that Il Papa sounded like a Marxist. Well, this global warming encyclical, that may be Latin for rant, seems to confirm. I'm just kidding. I know that encyclical is not Latin for rant. I just watch Trump. But he doesn't even disguise it, folks, in this encyclical. He doesn't even disguise it. Every other word seems to be about how unfettered capitalism is destroying the world and how the rich countries have to give more money to the poor countries to make amends. I mean, that's, call it what you want, Marxism, socialism, what have you. But if this thing is real, then it leaves no doubt here what the political leanings or inclinations of the pontiff are.
The encyclical was about climate change, and Russia's going, aha! I told you the Pope is a Marxist! But Rush, that doesn't make any sense. And it's not like on page 4, you know, in the third paragraph, he's like, oh, and by the way, I believe in communism and I'm a Karl Marx fan. That doesn't happen. He didn't do that. He's talking about science! And he's saying how we should care for the Earth. But see, in Rush's mind, oh, you believe in science? You goddamn Marxist is what you are. Oh, that's so sad, because it's such an admission of defeat. Here you have a guy, for the first time in a long time, the Catholic Church is doing something decent and saying, we believe in science and we should take care of the Earth. And to Rush Limbaugh, that's like, oh, you're on the side of taking care of the Earth and making sure it's clean, and you're on the side of the scientists, therefore you are my enemy. It is an admission of defeat, because he's like, we can't keep up with the researchers and the intelligent people and the people who mean well and care about, you know, their grandkids' generation. But we're not on that side. We're on the side of let's be piggy and let's be on the side of the oil companies and let's fuck up everything now and let's pretend like science is irrelevant and untrue. Well, thank you, Rush, for bowing out and telling us essentially that you're an idiot. Not that he doesn't do that daily on his show anyway. But also, notice how it struck me. It smacked me in the face when listening to Rush, and I don't know why it smacked me more this time than any other time I've listened to him. But, like, he thinks he's a hero. The narcissism is just, it's overwhelming. It's overflowing. It's, like, dripping from every comment he has. I don't want to do what I told you so, Segman, even though I do, and I'll pretend to be humble even though I'm not. And you're doing an I told you so when there is no I told you so. The Pope says climate change is real. You're like, so you are a Marxist. And notice also, what does he conveniently leave out in that entire conversation? I don't know, maybe a guy named Jesus who was a Marxist before Marxism existed? Again, he thinks he's like, I nailed you, Pontiff. There you are, acting like a Marxist. Well, Rush, you say you're a Christian, you pretend you believe in Christianity, you believe in Jesus, and that God is even more Marxist-like than the Pope. So by attacking him, you're, in essence, attacking the same kind of beliefs that Jesus had. Well, was Jesus not in favor of universal health care? If he was around today, what would he have done? Voted for the Iraq War? For Dick Cheney and the neoconservatives? Is he not for universal education? Is he not for social safety nets? Is he not for taking care of the poor and the sick and the downtrodden? God, everything about his philosophy, it's just he's so insulated in his dumb world that he doesn't even, like, realize that he's open to legitimate criticism, and the critics are almost universally correct. And I also just can't take how boring his show is. Like, I'm genuinely stunned at how bad he is at doing a radio show when he's been doing a radio show forever. Like, how are you still boring? And why are you still talking in that fake-ass voice? He irks me in so many ways, and he's beyond annoying. And I've just found it hilarious that, how can you do an I Told You So segment when there is no I Told You So? You believe in science, you're a Marxist. Well, if believing in science makes you a Marxist, I guess every scientist is by definition a Marxist, and every intelligent person is a Marxist. All right. He also just doesn't, let's face it, he has no political definitions either, man. He just doesn't. He's like, how dare you attack unfettered capitalism? I guess you're a Marxist. Well, no, unfettered capitalism is unregulated capitalism. You can be in favor of regulated capitalism, and you're certainly not a Marxist if you want regulated capitalism. Again, nuance is something that escapes Rush Limbaugh very clearly. Okay. Now we go to Greg Gutfeld, who also attacked the Pope. Greg Gutfeld of Fox News responded to the Pope and the fact that he acknowledged climate change in a recent encyclical. So let's see how preciously pathetic this is with the argument he uses.
On Thursday, Pope Francis will release a letter to Catholic bishops called an encyclical. This is a message that will focus on the environment, and the pontiff is expected to warn the world about climate change. An Italian magazine has leaked a draft of it, and the Pope is reportedly going to declare that global warming is real and partly caused by humans. He'll also call on world governments to work together to fight it. It's already raising concerns among some Catholic conservatives, like Judge Napolitano, who worry about the Pope politicizing the issue.
Is the Pope going to provide the moral basis for what? Regulating the pollutants in the environment? If the Pope is going to say Catholics have to get behind the left on global warming, that would be absurd, and it would cause a schism in the church.
All right, Greg, I think that this is not a surprise that the Pope is coming out with this encyclical, and he's been sort of inching their way up to this. And I do believe that global warming believers and supporters are hoping that the Pope will be able to convince skeptics
mm-hmm.
to just go along with the program.
The most dangerous person on the planet is somebody who's seeking strange new respect from their adversaries. And that is what the Pope is doing. He doesn't want to be your grandfather's Pope. He wants to be a modern Pope. All he needs is dreadlocks and a dog with a bandana, and he could be on Occupy Wall Street.
Almost witty. That's nearly funny. I almost maybe, if it was funnier, laughed. Greg Gutfeld is a joke because he thinks he's funny. Like, he's like, I will be the one conservative comedian that actually is successful. And fucking crickets, unless you're talking at, like, a senior citizen center in one of the richest, most conservative areas in the country. That's the only way Greg Gutfeld would get laughs. Anywhere else, people are like, I know he's trying to be funny, but I'm not laughing. Okay, he said the Pope is the most dangerous person on the planet because he's seeking approval of the people he disagrees with. I don't even know what that means. What are you saying? It's like written in the laws of nature that the Pope has to be conservative? And why are you just assuming that the Pope is conservative or the Pope should be conservative? It can't just be that he's not conservative on some issues? Like, I don't know, taking care of the poor? For example, following the example of, what's his name again? Jesus! So he's not allowed to be liberal on economic issues. He's not allowed to be liberal when it comes to taking care of the environment and being against global warming and being on the side of science. He's not allowed to be on that side because if he is on that side, he's the most dangerous person on the planet, and he's just seeking approval from his enemies. That's what he's doing. I don't know. It's like he grandfathered the Pope onto his team. He's like, you're on our team. Come here. Come on. You're on our team. Don't you dare try to appease people on the other side. Don't try to seek approval from people you actually agree with. It's amazing how disconnected they are. Most dangerous person on the planet. It's just like in the last segment we covered Rush Limbaugh. He did an I Told You So segment about the Pope being Marxist. But the story was just about how the Pope said, the scientists are right, climate change is real, and we should try to stop it. And Russia's like, aha, Marxism. But it's not, Mark, what are you talking about? You're just making it up as you go along. Same thing with Greg Gutfeld. Most dangerous man on the planet because he wants to take care of the environment, and he believes in science. So it's not, you know, al-Baghdadi, who's the most dangerous guy on the planet. It's not jihadists who are the most dangerous. It's not, I don't know, fucking Putin with the launch codes and the fact that he has nukes and he's a crazy person and he just fucking annexed parts of Ukraine. No, that, you know, the Pope is a problem. And notice, when it was the last Pope, ooh, mum's the word. Mum's the word. Nobody can critique the former Pope. Why? Because he was a douchebag. He's on our team. He's an asshole. So don't critique him. Meanwhile, the last Pope, there were letters from that Pope to other leading officials in the Catholic Church saying, hey, by the way, ex-nay on telling the cops gay about the kid fucking A. I'm not kidding about that. Not to mention, of course, he was in the Hitler Youth when he was younger, but overlooked that. Everybody was a Nazi when they were young, right? That's the counter-argument people make. Like, what? What? He was a kid. What did you want him to do? I don't know. Maybe you could have picked a Pope who wasn't ever in the Hitler Youth? Call me fucking crazy. But he shuffled around people from different church to different church so that they can escape the cops finding them and law enforcement finding them when they know that they were involved in sex crimes. You have to understand, man, it was a coordinated mass effort to cover up the sex abuse of children in the Catholic Church. The last Pope was part of that. He was leading that effort to try to cover up the crimes. But what does Greg Gutfeld have to say about that Pope? That guy's not the most dangerous person in the world, even though he was effectively pro-child fucking. But this new one, because he recognizes science, and he recognizes that we should take care of the environment. Most dangerous man in the world. Please. Your bias is so obvious and so irrational that's actually laughable. Your jokes don't get anybody to laugh, but how stupid you are, that gets people to laugh. All right, now. Now we go to North Carolina for a pretty heartbreaking anti-gay story. A third grade teacher in North Carolina named Omar Curry witnessed the bullying of one of his students, which led to the student crying, and it affected him. And he wanted to do something to try to right the wrong and try to make the kid feel better and to teach a lesson to the class. So what he did is he read the class a fable about a prince who meets a prince and falls in love. I think the name of the book is King and King. So it's a pleasant story about gay rights and gay equality. So here's what Curry said, quote, "In that moment, it just seemed natural to me to read the book and have a conversation about treating people with respect. My focus then was on the child and helping the child." So again, put yourself in this guy's shoes. You have a kid crying because he was just bullied, and I think the kid was actually in a very derogatory way. He was called gay, and it led to the kid crying. So he's like, what am I supposed to do here? I guess let me teach a lesson about tolerance and make this kid feel better and read this book. So naturally, 3 hours later, he was called into the principal's office, and he was scolded because three parents complained that they were outraged, quote, outraged by the book. Outraged by that book. So he ended up resigning. As did the vice principal, who was supportive of him, and the vice principal who, at least according to one article, like introduced that book to him. So the vice principal resigned, and he resigned. Because the school was like, oh, you just taught people tolerance and equality. That's not right. We're against that. Look, man, this goes back to a point that I often make when we're talking about Muslim fundamentalists, for example, whether we're talking about ISIS We're just talking about insane conservatives across the board. Cultural relativism is not correct. It's not true. It's not right. It's not moral. The idea that, well, that's just how they do it in North Carolina. This is their culture. Their culture is slightly different, so they fire the guy because he believes in tolerance. What? They got to live how they want to live. You can't force them to change. Oh, yes, we can. Yes, we can. Because to say, like, whatever, they just do it differently, then you're part of the problem. Do you get that? Like, if you just sheepishly follow along with the bad actors, well, that's compliance. And that, again, that's part of the problem. No, everybody's got to stand up when something like this happens and says, no, not on my watch, not on our watch. If a kid is crying because he was bullied and he was called gay, and then the teacher says, all right, guys, here, let me tell you a little story and read you this fable about the king and king, or the prince meets a prince, they fall in love. Look, they're just like everybody else. There's nothing wrong with being gay. Let's not hate people who are different. That, if that unfolds like that, and then you say, I'm against it, I can't believe you did that, then your value system is incorrect. Your value system is primitive. Your value system is inferior. You see, the thing is, they think it is more moral to get outraged and try to fire this guy or to let him leave because of what he did. But they totally missed it because they have it backwards. No, you are the immoral ones. See, they don't get that. They think we're standing up for the right values, man. We're just standing up for our religion and our culture. But your religion and your culture are incorrect. Your religion and your culture has led to treating gay people in a way as if they're inferior systemically. You haven't given them equal rights. You haven't protected them under the law. You haven't said, hey, if you fall in love, you can get married just like anybody else can get married. And by the way, you have the same inheritance rights. You have the same Social Security rights. You have the same rights under tax law. So what you're doing is you're singling them out, and you're saying, okay, you are not like everybody else. You are not equal to everybody else. Know your fucking place. You're a second-class citizen. Sit down and shut the fuck up. But then you're compliant in a form of new apartheid, essentially. That's what you are. And the thing is, they think, like, I think the part that pissed me off most about this is that the school district and the town in general, they just view it as like, well, we didn't do anything wrong. Well, we were just outraged that somebody taught equality. Okay, but you know what I would do if I was the school and some parents complained? I'd say, ha-ha, take a fucking hike. Go, just walk away. Go ahead. You can teach your kids whatever kind of bullshit, nonsense, religious garbage you want at your house, but when they're in a public school district, they're going to learn about tolerance, they're going to learn about equality, and they're going to learn the right value system. Now, hopefully your indoctrination doesn't override facts and truth, but, you know, unfortunately there are a lot of idiots in the world anyway, so it is what it is. But we will counteract your propaganda. Because think about how damaging it is, too. The reason why terrible mentalities continue, the reason why anti-Semitism continues, the reason why Islamophobia continues, the reason why anti-gay bigotry continues, the reason why all this stuff is perpetuated is because a bunch of fucking idiots shelter their kids in this dogmatic, incorrect ideology, and then those kids hate because they don't know anything different. And then when a good teacher comes along and says, we'll make it so that, you know, there is no hate, they're like, oh, no, we must stop, fire that person. I'm outraged. Discipline that person. No, you guys are the problem. You guys are the bad people. You guys are the immoral ones. You guys are the unethical ones. You guys are the ones who are stupid. Call it what it is, man. If you're clinging on, whether it's, you know, you're clinging on to dogmatic fundamentalist Islamic beliefs, dogmatic fundamentalist Christian beliefs, or you're just hanging on to ultra-right-wing ideologies like, you know, neo-Nazis or whatever. If you're clinging to that, you have mental issues. You have problems, okay? It's not an equal and opposite or a superior way of thinking. It's not based on the facts. It's not intellectual. And you're actively hurting the world that we live in right now. And you're hurting people who are good people who aren't hurting anybody else. You're the ones that are doing the hurting. Okay. Pretty outraged there. But anyway. All right, now let's go to a marijuana story. Colton Turner is a 15-year-old kid with Crohn's disease, and according to KSDK and Colton's parents, the last 3 years have basically revolved totally around his disease. So they've just nonstop doctor's appointments and hospital's visits, and it's been totally draining on everybody involved, and they all admit that. Even Colton's like, you know, this is insanity to have to go through all this. So let me give you a quote from him. He says, "I was just on every pharmaceutical there was out there until I wound up in a wheelchair." So make no mistake about it, the Crohn's disease was debilitatingly painful. And then when you mix on top of that all the powerful pharmaceuticals he was on, he says, "They didn't really help me, but they did make me more drowsy, make me more lazy, and, you know, it was just negative all around between the medicines and the disease, and I was still in pain, and it was horrific." Well, a doctor suggested he try cannabis oil as an alternative treatment to all the pharmaceuticals he was taking. But there was a problem. The problem is the state laws where they live in Illinois prevented that. Of course, so it's like there's always a roadblock where the state is getting in the way of a common sense thing. So out of desperation, they decided, let's move to Colorado and let's give this a try. And since he started using the new treatment, he says he feels a million times better. He says, quote, "It's great because I can finally do stuff that I wasn't able to do a long time ago. Like I can finally ride my bike. After 3 or 4 years, I can shovel snow, I can hike mountains, and it's just amazing. It's had a larger positive effect on me than any other pharmaceuticals have." And then here's the really, really powerful quote here that people are talking about. He says, "I'd rather be illegally alive than legally dead." Yeah, I think that sums it up, and I think that says it all. And what's so frustrating as you read Colton's story is that where are the kind, well-meaning people in the government, whether they're politicians or they're people at the FDA or they're people at the DEA, who are reading the same news articles I'm reading where they go, oh, and the light bulb goes off in their head and they say, we got to change this. We got to change these laws. This is fucking insanity. I mean, could you imagine, flip the script and imagine it's somebody who, like Percocet or Vicodin or those kinds, if they're not sold, it's still illegal to take them even for medicinal uses in a bunch of different states. Just imagine we lived in that world. And then somebody had to move from Illinois to Colorado to legally take those painkillers in order to not be in pain and just live their life and feel somewhat normal. How would we react? People would be like, wait, that doesn't make any sense. But doctors in any state in the entire country can prescribe those pills, so what's the big deal? It's just medicine. That's all it is. Exactly. Same thing with this. For him, it's cannabis oil that works better. He didn't respond well to the other drugs. So he's using it, and nobody can say he's not using it medicinally. That's a big part of the story. Nobody can say it. He has Crohn's disease. It's proven. The doctors say, yes, he has it. So it's just medicine. So how can anybody say in any state in the country, no, you know, you can't use it here? Why? I got nothing. Me no likey drugs. Me believe propaganda I heard from my mommy and daddy. The fuck is your answer? You don't have an answer. Well, if anything, the answer is pharmaceutical companies, the DEA, who I just referenced before, and other people whose jobs depend on marijuana being illegal, they are keeping marijuana illegal because it's a jobs program. It's a jobs program at this point. A lot of people don't know this, but there used to be a movement against, or I think it was called Movement for a Drug-Free America or something like that, or Organization for a Drug-Free America, something along those lines. A lot of people don't know that was actually funded by alcohol companies and tobacco companies. No sense, because of course they are drugs. But what was the idea behind it? The idea was, oh, we don't want any drugs that are our competition. That's the idea. So don't legalize weed, don't, you know, none of this stuff, even for medicinal purposes. Just don't legalize anything else, because then that's going to cut into our profits, and we don't like that. Again, the DEA, they make their money by cracking down on people who do drugs. Peaceful people aren't hurting anybody, but they crack down on them and they get paid for it. So that's why they've been fighting tooth and nail against any Democrats who actually want to legalize drugs or decriminalize drugs or legalize it for medicinal purposes. They're against it because that's how they make their money. That's how they butter their bread. So we have an entrenched system. It's full of bribery. It's full of corruption. It's full of poor incentives. And as a result of that, we live in a world where you can read Colton Turner's story and nothing gets done. You know, there's no, it's not like people will read the story and tomorrow at a federal level, boom, medicinal marijuana is legal everywhere. They change the schedule of the drug at the FDA. Eventually it's legalized at a federal level. No, it's not happening. And it's not happening because we've lost all sight of reason and rationality, and we've lost all sight of being objective. And reading facts and saying, oh, wait, it is proven this is medicinally helpful, so let's go in that direction. We're still too stuck on a corrupt system, on a system built on bribery, a system built on poor incentives. And I'm sick of it, man. I'm fucking sick of it. Because now people, how many other Colton Turners are there out there that have Crohn's disease or have some other sickness? They live in a state where they can't get medicinal marijuana, and their parents just don't want to move to Colorado. They don't want to up and leave to go to a place where they can use it. So they sit and they fucking suffer with primitive drugs, and they live a life which has a much lower quality of life as a result of that. How many people like that are there out there? How many people are in pain, and the doctors won't prescribe marijuana, even though they know marijuana is the right thing because it's illegal in the state? How many of them are there out there? If this was any other medication, would we accept it? If it was anything that wasn't part of the drug war, would we accept it? If there was penicillin was banned in some states, but it's the only thing that could cure your infection, would we accept doctors just saying, I can't say it, even though I need to say it, but penicillin's the answer, but I can't say it because of the law? No, when the law is not just, it shouldn't be followed. When the law is not just, we need to change it, and we should change these laws immediately. At a federal level, allow medicinal weed. But, of course, I'd go a step further, not even just decriminalize it, legalize it at a federal level, because if somebody wants to use it recreationally, too, it's none of your goddamn business. You shouldn't lock them up in a cage because you disagree with what they do with their own consciousness. All right, let's take a break. When we come back, microdosing for LSD, that's interesting. And do Americans still like organized religion? That's a really interesting question, isn't it? Stay right there, guys. We'll be right back.
Highway, you can discover those faraway gold mine fishing holes before anyone else does. Ram put some serious distance between itself and the competition. Come see why during the Ram Drive and Discover event. EPA estimated 29 mpg highway based on available EcoDiesel V6 4x2 HFE model. Ram is a registered trademark of FCA US LLC.
block out thoughts of you so I don't lose my head. They're crawling like a cockroach, leaving babies in my bed. Dropping little reels of tape to remind me that I'm alone. Playing movies in my head that make a porno feel like home. There's a burning in my pride, a nervous bleeding in my brain. An ounce of peace is all I want for you. Will you never call again? And will you never say that you loved me just to put it in my face? And will you never try to reach me? It is I that wants to hate me today. Accomplishment that you helped me with. The one thing that always tore us apart is the one thing I won't touch again. In my sick way, I want to thank you for holding my head up late at night. While I was busy waging wars on myself, you were trying to stop the fight. You never doubted my warped opinions on things like suicidal hate. You made me compliment myself when it was way too hard to take. So I'll drive so far away that I never cross your mind. And do whatever it takes in your heart to leave me behind.
Hate me today.
All right, we're back, y'all. Let's, All right, no. Now we're back. Okay. There's a really interesting article by Philip Smith of Alternet out today discussing the issue of microdosing. Now, this is something I've never heard of before, but the idea is that some people are taking a very tiny dose of psychedelic drugs in the morning and then reporting on how they feel throughout the day, and so far, the results are very positive. So let me give you some of the article. They say, quote, microdosing refers to taking extremely small doses of psychedelics, so small that the effects usually associated with such drugs are not evident or are sub-perceptual while going about one's daily activities. It's being done by anyone from harried professionals to extreme athletes to senior citizen businesswomen, and they're claiming serious benefits from it. They continue to trip brains or have a transcendental experience on LSD. A dose of 400 micrograms or more is called for. To explore your inner self, take 200 micrograms. For creative problem solving, try 100 micrograms. But for microdosing, take only 10 to 15 micrograms. Similar microdoses for other psychedelics would include 0.2 to 0.5 grams of dried mushrooms, which is about one-fifth of the normal dose, or about 50 to 75 micrograms of mescaline. Now, in 2010, psychedelic researcher Dr. James Fadiman studied microdosing with some patients of his, and he found the following. What many people are reporting is, at the end of the day, they say, that was a really good day. You know, that kind of day when things kind of work. You're doing a task you normally couldn't stand for 2 hours, but you do it for 3 or 4. You eat properly, maybe you do one more set of reps, just a good day. That seems to be what we're discovering. So again, this is a concept I've never heard of, but then it hit me when I got through the article. I was like, oh, wait, yeah, that's probably like how you're supposed to do the drug anyway. And we've just, all along, we've been massively taking too much of all different drugs, not just psychedelics and not just hallucinogens, but, you know, when you get to the point where there's like a come up and a come down, you've probably done too much of the drug, as opposed to, you know, if you just do a decent amount where all you feel is positive effects and you're not totally disconnected from reality. Now, I'll admit that on the issue of psychedelics, I've never done them, so I really should shut the fuck up because all I know is what the researchers say. I don't have any personal experience with it, and a lot of you guys can speak more to that than I can. But having done almost every other drug, I can tell you it's become apparent, at least to me, that whenever I take, like, you know, half of what other people take, for example, you really do notice almost nothing but positive effects. Like, I remember for pharmaceutical drugs, take Adderall, for example, back when I was in college and I'd want to go out and party, but it's late and you're a little tired, and you're like, fuck it, let's pep up, take some Adderall, go out there and go crazy. If you take, like, just half of what the dose is, or same thing with painkillers, if you take, like, half of what the dose is, or, and this goes for any other drugs, too, if you take a little bit of it, it's almost like you could function totally normal, except you just feel a little bit of what the effects of the drug are supposed to be. So with Adderall, you're supposed to be, it's a very uppity high, like a cocaine-ish kind of high. Take a little bit of it, and you're just like, oh, I'm just very aware and very focused, and I have a heightened sense, but not to some ridiculous superhuman level. It just feels good. You know, same thing if you take something that's a downer and something that's supposed to relax you. If you take just a little bit of it, it's like, oh, you just feel kind of relaxed, but you're not totally out of it. You know, it's not like, for example, if somebody drinks too much or has too much Xanax, it's like they're fucking slurring their words and they can't follow along with what you're saying and they're tripping over themselves. If you take just a little bit, you're like, oh, I'm kind of on point, but just feel a little bit better than I normally do. And it's like, oh, that's probably the way you're supposed to use it. By the same token, if these people are microdosing with LSD or whatever other psychedelics and they're like, hey, I just had a fantastic day. I wasn't really high. You know, I wasn't like on fucking playing the flute with Scooby-Doo while on Neptune, but I was just enjoying myself, and I was just living my life and kind of focused and interested in everything I was doing, my response would be, oh, that's just a positive thing, and that's probably how you're supposed to use the drug. And this is why, look, I've been on the same page as Dr. Carl Hart from day one. Dr. Carl Hart has said that 80 to 90% of all drug users are moderate users, in the sense that they could use drugs, and they go to work, and they come home, and they take care of their business, and it's no big deal. They just do it like you would have a beer on a Saturday night or something like that. They just do it with all different types of drugs. And I think this kind of proves that. You know, all we hear is the negative stories in the media about a person overdoses and goes fucking crazy and jumps off a building. Person gets high on coke, has a heart attack. Oh, my God, it was crazy. All these negative stories, you don't hear about the 80 to 90% of people who are doing something similar to this and are living good lives. You don't hear about the person who says, hey, man, SSRIs saved my life, those the serotonin reuptake inhibitors that are antidepressants. A lot of people say, hey, that saved my life. Cara Santa Maria is a good example of that. You very rarely hear stories like that in the media. You very rarely hear somebody say, hey, man, look, the only thing that worked for me ever is marijuana. Some people, they say pharmaceutical drugs fail them, and they go to marijuana, and they're like, oh, it stops me from going crazy, and I smoke it every day, and it's good. It helps me function, and I'm happier, and it works. You don't hear the pure positive stories. You know, you don't hear somebody who takes ADHD meds, Adderall, and says, look, I'm not going to lie to you guys. It's been nothing but positive for me. It changed my life for the better. You don't hear those stories. The media doesn't tell those stories. But the reality is that exists a lot more than people realize and a lot more than people want to talk about. And I'm so glad that I'm fucking reading an article now where somebody's talking about basically responsible use of psychedelics, and they're saying nothing but positive effects. Nothing but positive effects. I took a mini dose of it, and, you know, my day went by beautifully, and I think I'm gonna do it every day. Just a little bit every morning, similar to somebody would drink a cup of coffee or something like that. I'm going to wake up, have a little bit of this. I'm just going to feel better, and I'm just going to, you know, love my life and go about it that way. There's nothing wrong with that. Again, as Dr. Carl Hart says, not only do we not live in a drug-free society, you wouldn't want to live in a drug-free society. It's actually part of nature, if you think about it. I mean, it's documented in all different types of animals that they will pick the right kinds of berries and eat them, and they'll get high off it. There was a report out, Huffington Post Weird News had an article yesterday based on a study where they found out that chimpanzees, given alcohol, they imbibe. They drink it all the time. It's like, if they have a choice to drink it, they're like, oh, fuck yeah, bitch, watch me drink this. Then you guys want to fuck? And you got to understand, what does that show? It shows that there's a certain aspect of this, there's a certain element of this that's natural. If it fits with the receptors in your fucking brain, you can't act like there's never any good use for this under any circumstance. Of course there is. If you're a moderate user, if you know your personality, this is the important part here. If you know your personality, and you know you're not obsessive when it comes to stuff like this, you know you don't have an addictive personality, and you know you can control yourself, and you have limits, and you can stick to those limits, have fun, son. Do whatever drug you want in tiny doses. It only becomes an issue when that tiny percentage of the population can't handle themselves and they keep going, and it's just in their physiology or in their biology or in their DNA or in their genetics that they're predisposed to not having the off switch. For those people, you know, I feel bad for them, and they should get treatment because it's a medical issue. But for everybody else, don't take it away from everybody else because some people can't handle it. That's ridiculous, and that's undemocratic, and that's the opposite of freedom. And I think reading a story like this kind of shows you that not only should these drugs be legal, but oftentimes they're good for you. That really flips the paradigm on its head, and it also happens to be true. Now, we go to religion. There's a new Gallup poll out asking the American people if they have a great deal or quite a lot of confidence in the church and in organized religion. And they don't. To put it very simply, they don't. So let's take a look at the chart here. As you can see, the number has steadily dropped from when they started asking the question until today. They started asking in 1973. As you can see there, around 75, it was 68% of the American people said they had quite a lot of confidence or a great deal of confidence in organized religion. It's just been a steady decline around, what is that, 1995, it was 5%. And then you fast forward to today, it's 42% of the American people say they have a lot of confidence in organized religion. That's low, man. Now, let's keep everything in perspective, though. It still is the case that anywhere from 70 to 76% of the American people self-describe as Christian. So it is still an overwhelming majority that is Christian. But what this shows you is some people say they're Christian, but it's not actually like they're part of the organized religion where they actually go to church and they listen to the hierarchy and things like that. The people who say, I believe in that, and that makes sense to me, the organized aspect, it's only 42%. So that's really low, and that should have, you know, the religious people scratching their heads here and going, what's happening? It's almost like we're getting less and less religious in America. Ding, 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 that would be correct. Now, remember, we covered a story recently, just a few months ago, about how the number of nuns in America, N-O-N-E-S, so people who are unaffiliated, want nothing to do with religion, it hit a record high. Now it's 22%. 22%. That's a lot, man. If you compare that to other minority groups, for example, I mean, what is it? I think 12% to 16% of the American population is black. 22%. There are more people who are unaffiliated with religion than there are black people in America. And that number is going to continue to rise. Look out, man. Religion better look out in America. Now, again, full context, worldwide, this is not the trend. I thought it was, but again, a recent report that we covered on the show proved that that's not the case. There's actually an increase in religion in some places around the world. There's been I think Islam is growing the fastest, and then also Christianity is growing around the world at a decent rate. It's just that in America and in the Western world, it's going down. So what you see here is, in my opinion at least, it's good for America, good for the West in general, and I just hope that the message pierces through to other areas as well, because it's very important to move away from the dogmatism of religion and definitely the organized aspect of religion, because these are the kind of the worst of the worst. You know, it's one thing if you say, hey, I'm a Muslim, or hey, I'm a Christian, or hey, I'm a Buddhist, but, you know, you're like, do I do anything about it? Not really. They just say they're that because their parents were that, you know? That's one thing, and that's better than somebody who's like, yes, I'm an evangelical Christian, and I just went to John Hagee's sermon, and it was great. He talked about how much he hates poor people. Yeah, the organized aspect is worse, man. The organized aspect is worse because there's more dogmatism tied in with that, and there's a higher level of irrationality. Let's be honest about it. But even when it comes to the nuns, while we are moving in the right direction, and that's a good thing, when you dive into the specifics about that, there's a large percentage of the nuns that are basically new age spiritualist kind of people, where they say, I'm not a part of any religion, I don't believe in organized religion, but I believe in, like, spirits, man, or I believe in a god, just I don't know anything about that god or something like that. Now, again, broadly speaking, I'd consider those people with us, secular people, because they're not trying to shove religion, you know, into the law books, and they're not trying to change your mind and get you to buy into a holy book or anything like that. So they're with us to a certain extent. But still, you know, atheists and agnostics, who I think are more right, we need to up our number, you know, because then there the polls are much less. If you look at, like, just atheists, I've seen polls anywhere from 3% to 5% of Americans are actually say, like, I'm an atheist. That I'd like to rise more. But the main takeaway here is, in the Western world, and specifically in America, we're winning. Our argument is being heard. And I think a lot of this has to do with the internet, man, because the internet came along and it just busted up a lot of the bullshit you believed. Back in the day, if you're sitting at a bar in 1973 and you and your buddy are having an argument about something scientific, let's say, whoever, you know, was the smoother talker or who was louder or who got more people to agree with them, they would say, oh, I guess that's it. I guess that's how it works. Tony said it. He said it loud. I guess he's right. Well, today we have Google, son. Today somebody's saying some bullshit, you whip out your smartphone, you Google it, you go, oh, you are exactly wrong, Tony. Go take a hike, bitch. So you could do that now. Back then you couldn't do it. So the internet is one of the main things you give credit to here. Also, I'd go as far as to give credit to a lot of different political thinkers and a lot of different philosophers, a lot of different writers who have weighed in on this topic. I don't think it's a coincidence that as soon as the new atheist movement took off, there's a direct link with how many more people decided to call themselves atheists. And I know there's a lot of people hate the new atheists, Richard Dawkins and Sam Harris and Bill Maher and Daniel Dennett and Hitchens and people like that. But you can't deny, now I'm not saying there's definitely a causation there, that they wrote the books and then boom, atheism went up, so it's because of them. But there's undeniably a correlation. It's undeniable that when people started writing those books, it is true that there were more atheists that were willing to come out of the closet. So there's this movement, because of the internet and because people are more willing to talk about their beliefs, that's leading to us winning. When you have a true free marketplace of ideas, I think we will win, because I think we are right. And we have some more good news on that front today, because a lot more people in America are saying, I don't have confidence in organized religion, because that part of it is bullshit. All right, let me squeeze in two more here before we're done for the day. Let's go to the neo-Nazis. What? A neo-Nazi group in Jacksonville, Florida, is distributing flyers to the population. And they're, first of all, whining about being designated a hate group. I find that hilarious. Dude, you're fucking neo-Nazis. Even if you believe in it 100% or whatever, you have to admit, like, yeah, this is fringe. This is a tad extreme. So they're whining about that. But then second of all, they're also just really confused. I found the article on this hilarious from Raw Story. So here's what they say. First, they say everything you'd expect. They say they want to outlaw all non-white immigration to America. I guess that's standard among neo-Nazis. They want to ban homosexuality. Again, I didn't expect them to fly that LGBT flag. And they want to ban race mixing. Now, they don't go into detail, so maybe that they're just saying, hey, ban interracial marriage. Or maybe they're saying, I don't want interracial relationships. I don't want people from different races talking to each other. I want to bring back segregation. They didn't go into detail about it, but I'd imagine that they're probably as hard line as you can get, and they're just, keep them blacks over there, keep them Hispanics over there, and we're going to be over here, the white people, we should be in control. So that's more or less what they're advocating for here. But then they say this, quote, suggesting the National Socialist Movement is an organization of hate that presents a threat to any ethnic group is insane. We are at the center of right and left-wing ideologies. The center? What center are you talking about? And then they go on to advocate for tax cuts. But then they follow it up with calling for, quote, abolishment of the capitalistic consumer society. So you want tax cuts, but you want to get rid of capitalism. WTF, son. Now, let's understand, when they say we're part of the National Socialist Movement, understand, that doesn't mean they're actually socialists. Of course they're not socialists. They're the furthest thing from socialists, just like the Nazis called themselves National Socialists. What they were is fascists. Totally different. It's a far right-wing ideology. They just use the term socialist, you know, to try to make it seem like, well, we care about the people, but only if they're exactly like us. And we're not authoritarian, even though that's exactly what we are. So they call themselves that, but they're not actually socialists. So let's clear that up. But again, look at how confused they are. We're in the center. We're the moderates. That's what we are. No, oftentimes we talk on this show about how we are the real moderates. Now, I say that because I'm right smack dab in the middle of American mainstream opinion on most issues. Raising the minimum wage, I'm with the American people. Doing background checks for purchasing guns, I'm with the American people. Ending the wars, I'm with the American people. The list goes on and on. Tax the rich a little more, I'm with the American people. So we actually have a standard by which we say, hey, we're moderate, hey, we're centrists, hey, we're independent-minded. These guys are like, we're centrists, we're in the middle, even though I just advocated for banning homosexuality, bringing back segregation, outlawing all non-white immigrants to America. It's centrist, centrist. But it's not centrist. What the fuck are you talking about? And it struck me, man. It hit me. Because this was all written in the flyer. And then I realized, like, oh, right. This is like a group of fucking teenagers or 20-year-olds or whatever the fuck it is. They don't know anything. They probably had, like, two separate guys work on the flyer that they were going to print out and then distribute. And they're just all talking out of their ass. Like, one guy's like, yeah, we believe, or fuck everybody who's not white. Fuck the gays. Bring back segregation. Yeah. And the other guy's like, all right, we got to try to put a positive spin on this. So let's just say we're centrist. Let's say we're against capitalism while we say the other guy says we want tax cuts. So in other words, what does this show you? It shows you how pathetic and small and fringe and extreme and ridiculous the ultra-right-wing movements in America have become. And I would do nothing but laugh about this if it wasn't for the fact that, unfortunately, these are the idiots who actually do more terrorism in America than anybody else. 56% is ultra-conservative terrorism. Now, usually it's actually more sovereign citizens and more that variety than it is neo-Nazi, and it's actually more KKK than neo-Nazi. But, you know, either way, what we're dealing with here is a group of fucking idiots who can't even get a central message right. They can't even get on the same page for a literal single page when they give out flyers to try to recruit people. And finally, ties right in with the neo-Nazi story we just did. Researchers from the U.S. and Switzerland did a really interesting analysis of the German social survey, or I should say the German general social survey, to see how prevalent anti-Semitism still is among the population. They say the following, quote, anti-Semitic propaganda had a lifelong effect on German children schooled during the Nazi period, leaving them far more likely to harbor negative views of Jews than those born earlier and later. The findings indicate that attempts to influence public attitudes are most effective when they target young people, particularly if the message confirms existing beliefs. So the idea is, when you're young, you're particularly vulnerable to ideas and concepts, and if they're hammered into your mind when you're young, it's nearly impossible to unlearn them later. Now, a lot of people are saying, well, that's obvious. Why are we even discussing this? But no, it's more concrete than you think it is. That's the point of this here. Because just like with language, for example, they've done studies on language. There's a brief period when you're young where your mind is flexible enough and you're just ready to learn a language at a certain point when you're very young. You absorb it easier when you're young in a brief time span. There are people who were essentially raised by horrific parents. They didn't speak to them the entire time they were young, kept them locked in the basement, horrific stories like that. And what researchers learned is that with people like that who didn't experience language from a young age and they didn't have that interaction with their environment, when they're older and then they try to learn a language, they can't. It's like you missed the boat. You missed the period where you can learn about it. Your brain just can't function in that way anymore, and it can't function in nearly as much of a way where you can absorb the information. They just can't absorb it anymore. They just can't learn it. So it's really striking how black and white it is. And they're saying it's not just that with language. In many ways, it's that kind of thinking with other views like racism and things of that nature. So they continue here and say, quote, by focusing on those respondents who expressed consistently negative views of Jews in a number of questions, the researchers found that those born in the 1930s held the most extreme anti-Semitic opinions, even 50 years after the end of Nazi rule. People also showed marked differences depending on whether they came from an area where anti-Semitism was already strong before the Nazis. So, what's the takeaway from this? This is really important, man. The takeaway is education is everything. Like, it's not just some things, it's not just a large piece of the pie. No, it's everything. Whoever is educating young people in any society, that will dictate the kind of future that we're going to have. It's that simple. So if you're raising kids and you're really teaching them the idea of tolerance and equality, and you're teaching them science and you're teaching them actual facts, well, that will have unintended positive consequences for generations in the future. I mean, it's nothing but good stuff if you do that. On the flip side, if you're teaching racism or religious dogmatism or anti-Semitism or all types of garbage when they're young, you're basically fucking up the world for generations to come. You're basically guaranteeing that down the road we're going to have more wars, we're going to be dumber, we're not going to have as good technology, we're going to be less happy, all these things, every negative thing you can imagine. So this is why, you know, we do our show, and I'm always screaming at the liberals, and I'm screaming at the scientists. Market, message properly, talk about your beliefs, don't back away, be unapologetic, because it's going to have an effect, man. It's going to have an effect. And who do you want teaching the kids? Pat Robertson? You want Bill O'Reilly teaching the kids? You want former Nazis from Germany teaching the kids? You want Christian religious fundamentalists teaching them? You want Muslim fundamentalists teaching them? Do you want all these people with irrational, unscientific, dumbass beliefs to teach the kids? Mm-hmm. Or do you want to grow a fucking pair of balls and you stand up and you say, we got this, step aside. Let's teach the kids science. Let's teach the kids math. Let's teach the kids how to think. Let's teach the kids tolerance. Let's teach them equality. Let's teach them civil liberties. Let's teach them all the things that make sense. It's not, hey, people like us should do it. We have to do it. Because if we don't do it, generations down the road are just fucked, and there's no hope. All right, I'm out of time, guys. Fun show. What day is today? Again, I lost track of the dates. I think it's Wednesday. Yeah, that's right, it's Wednesday. So we'll have an awesome show for you tomorrow, needless to say. Follow me on Twitter, at Kyle Kalinske, at Kyle Kalinske. Not a big deal. I predicted the game right. Fuck, I'm out of time. I would brag about that. Damn it, I'll brag tomorrow. All right, love you. Peace.